Mask mandates mean nothing to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The podcast that proves recycling stuff doesn't work. He's a former resident of the old Pueblo, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello again, everybody. Welcome back to the studio where we record Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. It's wonderful to have you with us today. It's a cloudy but warm Arizona day in late April, and I just couldn't be happier to have you guys with us to enjoy another episode of our podcast. It is designed to give you some confidence when you have to deal with Medicare. Medicare can be confusing and scary, and I have written a book that hopefully will do some good in explaining Medicare in an understandable way and kind of an entertaining way. And in addition to that, I'm hoping it will lend you some confidence when your time for Medicare comes, that you will be right on the money as to what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, and you will be so happy when it's all over. Now, I, of course, can be a personal, I can take part personally in your trek through Medicare, but the first step is always to buy the book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024. And you can get that at barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com. And if you go to Amazon, there are going to be four editions in addition to the paperback, which Barnes & Noble also has. You may purchase the hardcover book, which I think is the flagship of the fleet. It's a magnificent creation. Or if you'd like to get a little more technical, you can purchase the e-version. The e-reader version of the book can be sent to your reader in no time flat, and that is going to be the least expensive of all the options. And finally, if you'd like to listen to the book being read to you, then the Audible version for around $6 and change would be your choice. So in any event, the book is there waiting to share its knowledge with you. And when you have absorbed that knowledge, you will be equivalent to some of the finest Medicare minds in America. Your knowledge acquisition will put you in the upper echelon of Medicare experts. And I'll be happy to have you there because I'll be able to take credit for your skills, your accomplishments, and your Medicare acumen. Yeah, that's what it is, acumen. In any event, Randy Carson is waiting for us to get started. He doesn't like it when I sit here and pat myself on the back every day like I have been prone to do. So I'm going to stop doing that and say hello to Randy. Hello, Randy.
Hello, Doug. How are you?
Well, I'm pretty cool right now. I'm very pleased to be here about our Chat GPT conversation that we had in the last episode. I have more Chat GPT stuff. The content curator accidentally discovered another a mention of Chat GPT down in the bottom of an article about something entirely different. And I'm pretty excited about what you told me, which is that I can remove the drudgery from my job of helping people figure out Medicare, and I can make it more efficient and rapid is what I'm gathering you're saying.
Yes, yes. Absolutely. You know what? This is going to, you know, my brain works in strange ways, right?
Well, that's what your wife says. So,
yeah, I know.
Who am I to argue with her?
You know, every time somebody talks about Chat GPT or AI, you know what immediately pops into my head?
I do not.
You remember the movie Airplane?
Oh, my, one of my all-time favorites.
You remember the autopilot?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Actually, was that the co-pilot or was it the autopilot that needed to be reinflated?
It was the autopilot.
Oh, okay, all right.
So those of you who remember that movie will know why I've got a grin on my face. But
yeah,
ultimately, AI is going to be a good thing for all of us. It just needs to be used in the appropriate way. Never left on its own. It always has to have human supervision. And unfortunately, some companies right now are trying to do it without supervision.
Well, that's not a good thing, probably. And I've also heard that AI results have been unduly guided by people with evil intentions.
Yes, yes. Well, you can make, I mean, based on how it's working in terms of the information that it analyzes to, you know, learn what they call learning.
Yeah.
Depends on, you know, if you feed it bad crap, you get bad crap out. I mean,
and that's what garbage, they've always said about computers, garbage out, yeah. Garbage in, no, garbage in, garbage out.
Gigo.
Yeah.
Garbage in, yeah. Garbage out.
Right.
Well, evil in, evil out.
Yes, that is, that's a scary thought. But if we can tell the difference, if the output is recognizable as evil or garbage, then, you know, that's allows us to protect ourselves from the effects of it, I hope.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm at sea right now because I rely on my neighbor, who is, it's like, he's like a little kid. I mean, he's 40 years old, for Christ's sake, and he's all exuberant all the time. I used to be like that too, but that was a long time ago. In any event, he's the one that got me all excited about ChatGPT. He got me to sign up for a monthly subscription, and he's got another thing going on right now. I was ready to tell him, you know, about our conversation, but he is distracted because his little nephew in California was born with a definite need for a transplant of a heart, which is incredible that we can do that with babies. I mean, this kid is like a few months old. And so his whole family moved to USC, I think, to their medical facility, waiting for instant transplant when a heart became available. And between our episode recordings here, I discovered that the heart became available. The surgery will take place at 2:00 this afternoon. And
God bless him. I mean, I wish them well.
Well, I wanted to go ask him a million questions about ChatGPT, but I think he's preoccupied right now.
He's probably not going to give you a straight answer.
Right. So
my answer would be, oh my God, my phone battery is running out. Talk to you later.
Oh, you know what he I feel, oh, there he goes. He's walking. Pardon my coughing. He's walking by outside. I played a dirty trick on him. We had our HOA annual meeting a couple of weeks ago, and there was a change in personnel based on the election, and so he was elected to the board of directors. And of course, it was expected that I would become the president because the president that we had was she lost by one vote, and she's such a wonderful woman. I don't know why that happened, but in any event, I said I arranged it so that Daniel became our new president instead of me, because I really
you're a good friend.
Yeah, his head is spinning right now. Oh my God, what I do. And so I found out yesterday that he broke his iPhone, and the way he broke his iPhone was loading salt for the water softeners of two single ladies that live in our neighborhood. Now, it's not an over 55 neighborhood. There are younger people here too, but he decided to put salt in these two ladies' water softeners. They live in two different houses, and that's how he broke his phone. So I said, something? He dropped it on the floor while he was, loading.
How do you break your iPhone loading salt?
All I know is those two things are not normally related, but in his case, that's what happened. Well, so I try to tell him that that is not among the duties of the president of the HOA to be
loading
make
salt.
Sure every,
oh,
to make
no.
sure everybody's water softeners are full of salt.
No, 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 no.
He's going to wind up burning out early. I want him to last a full 2-year term at least. I don't want him.
And he'll go broke buying iPhones.
Well, or salt.
Yeah, they're.
You know, yeah. Of course, if I can get in on that free salt thing, then, you know, maybe.
Yeah, call him up going, you know, I hear you're loading salt for free.
Yeah, I got a crick in my back. Well, anyway, let me get to going here on the content curator's latest discovery. It looks kind of interesting because the headline is really about something unrelated to ChatGPT or artificial intelligence. The headline of this article is more patients are emailing doctors and the health systems are starting to charge fees for that. Now, for Christ's sake, I would think that this would be the opposite. I would think that it'd be more convenient and less of a time suck when people are emailing the doctors, but they're talking about charging by the email. So the text goes on to say, because we're skipping a few paragraphs here for continuity, spurred on by the sharp rise in email messaging during the COVID pandemic, a growing number of health systems around the country have started charging patients when physicians and other clinicians send replies to their messages. The Cleveland Clinic, the Mayo Clinic, San Francisco-based University of California, SF, UCSF Health, Vanderbilt Health, St. Louis-based BIC Health, I don't know what that is, BJC, Healthcare, Chicago-based Northwestern Medicine, and the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Billings for e-visits, however, raise knotty questions about the balance between fairly compensating providers for their time and enhancing patients' access to care. A large part of the motivation for the billing is to reduce the messaging. Soon after the panic hit, health systems saw a 50% increase in emails from patients, with primary care physicians facing the biggest burden. System executives sought to compensate doctors and other providers for the extensive time they were spending answering emails. This seems like it would be a perfect task for ChatGPT if we could trust its responses. While prodding patients to think more carefully about whether an in-person visit might be more appropriate than a lengthy message, I would think an in-person visit would be even more of a drain on resources and time than an email would be. So after UCSF started charging in November of 2021, the rate of patient messages dipped by about 2%. Like UCSF, University of California, San Francisco, many other health systems now charge fees when doctors or other clinicians respond to patient messages that take 5 minutes or more of the provider's time over a 7-day period and require medical expertise. They use 3 billing codes for e-visits. E-visits that are eligible for billing include those related to changes in medication, new symptoms, changes or checkups related to a long-term condition, and requests to complete medical forms. There's no charge for messages about appointment scheduling, prescription refills, or other routine matters that don't require medical expertise. So far, UCSF patients are being billed for only 2% to 3% of eligible e-visits, at least partly because it takes clinicians extra time and effort to figure out whether an email encounter qualifies for billing. At the Cleveland Clinic, only 1.8% of eligible email visits are being billed to patients. There are 3 billing rates based on the time the clinician takes to prepare the message: 5 to 10 minutes, 11 to 20 minutes, and 21 minutes or more. Holy crap. He said patients haven't complained about the new billing policy, which started last November, and that they've become a little smarter and more succinct in their messages. Well, I guess they might be, rather than sending multiple messages a week. It's been a frustration for many physicians for many years that we were not reimbursed for our pajama time work, said the chairman of the American Academy of Family Physicians. Riverside Health System in Virginia started billing for e-visits in 2020. We do it because it's the right thing for patients, but rarely do you see other professions do this online work for free. We see physicians working 2 to 4 hours every evening on their patient emails after their shift is over, and that's not sustainable. But we worry that patients with complex diseases will stop messaging us entirely because of this copay risk. So according to the content curator, here's the payoff. Due to this worry, whatever worry that was, are we discouraging high-value messages that produce a lot of health gains? That's a serious concern. Due to this worry, the University of Colorado is experimenting with an alternative way of easing the time burden of e-visits on physicians. Working with Epic, the dominant electronic health record vendor, it will have an artificial intelligence chatbot draft email responses to patient messages. The chatbot's message will then be edited by the provider. Several other health systems are already using this tool. While Medicare, Medicaid, and most private health plans cover email visits, not all do. Coverage may depend on the contact between a health system and an insurer. Elevance Health, a Blue Cross Blue Shield carrier, recently told the health system it would no longer pay for email or telephonic visits in its commercial or Medicaid plans in Virginia. An Elevance spokesperson designed to comment, declined to comment. Wow, I need some artificial intelligence of my own. Another price concern is that patients who are uninsured who have high deductible plans may face the full cost of an email visit, which could run as high as $160. At the University of Michigan Health, where this somebody named Bakewell, that I guess I skipped over at the beginning, patients receive a portal alert prior to sending a message that there may be a charge. They must click a box indicating that they understand. So that's get ready for that. This brave new world is going to be charging us for communications with our doctors. And I can imagine that my family doctor from when I was a kid would be spinning in his grave if he had heard that he could make money just by communicating with his patients. And of course, nobody had any idea that email would be the way of communication back in those days. Here's an article by Rand Paul. It's a short but sweet opinion piece about AARP. This is a left-wing organization that has raised my hackles on more than one occasion. And I think I'm going to take a couple of deep breaths and think some thoughts, some comfortable thoughts, some happy thoughts before I read this, because I don't want to get all worked up. So if you'll pardon me, I'm going to just invoke some silence in the studio. Okay, I feel better now. I'm ready to tear into Rand Paul's opinion piece about ARP and its companion, UnitedHealthcare. UnitedHealthcare is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, health insurance company in America. And it came out of nowhere about 30 years ago. It was just a local Minneapolis, St. Paul, small-time health insurance company, and all of a sudden they exploded onto the scene. And this is in the, I'm going to say that it was in about 1990. I may be off by a year or two, but anyway, let's go with Rand Paul's article here. ARP, once known as the American Association of Retired Persons, is still mistakenly perceived by many as a seniors group, despite its significant transformation in recent years. In fact, the organization no longer represents anything substantial as its original purpose and commitment to advancing the interests of seniors that have seemingly vanished. The interests he's talking about have vanished. Today, ARP primarily functions as a marketing and advocacy tool for UnitedHealth, the largest health insurance company in the United States. Rather than prioritizing the well-being of seniors, ARP appears to be more focused on promoting the interests of this corporate entity. Most seniors and members of ARP are unaware of a crucial fact that highlights the organization's financial interests. ARP's revenue is not primarily derived from membership dues, but from lucrative corporate royalty arrangements. Notably, their highly profitable deal with UnitedHealth, one of the nation's largest health insurance conglomerates. In fact, UnitedHealth revenues now surpass those of banking giant J.P. Morgan. Under this arrangement, UnitedHealth pays ARP a significant portion of every monthly premium received from its ARP-branded Medicare plans, amounting to approximately $800 million per year. That is according to Juniper Research Analysis. ARP stopped disclosing the exact amount about 5 years ago. This financial partnership has given ARP substantial clout, allowing it to become a formidable political force. ARP strategically invests hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising and events that cleverly stop short of openly endorsing specific candidates. However, these candidates consistently align with the Democrat Party's priorities, subtly influencing voter preferences. This reveals a growing tendency for ARP to prioritize its association with UnitedHealth over the interests of senior citizens. During the heated Obamacare debate, a revealing truth emerged. While ARP members overwhelmingly voiced their opposition to the bill at a ratio of 14 to 1, ARP still threw its support behind the bill. It seems apparent that the allure of mandatory subsidized health insurance proved to be a significant triumph for UnitedHealth, even though the bill included drastic Medicare cuts that deeply angered seniors. This pattern repeated during discussions surrounding the so-called Inflation Reduction Act last year. Despite the bill's intention to impose price controls on prescription drugs, which may provide cost savings for health insurers, the unfortunate consequence is a hindrance to innovation and the development of groundbreaking treatments for seniors. Notably, during the misnamed Inflation Reduction Act debate, ARP organized 94 events for members of Congress. Astonishingly, only one event favored a Republican candidate who was heavily favored to win re-election. The list of Democrats involved seemed strikingly similar to the party campaign committee's roster of vulnerable members. Republicans have a tremendous opportunity to expose the truth about ARP's misleading advertising. Over 80% of ARP's members worry that the organization receives billions in corporate royalties from health insurance giants like UnitedHealthcare, while all activity lobbying lawmakers and government officials on matters related to drug and insurance costs. Shockingly, 80% of these members are unaware that ARP endorsed and supported Biden's Inflation Reduction Act, which brought about changes to Medicare. An overwhelming 85% expressed concerns that these changes could hinder the development of groundbreaking medical advancements and cures for chronic diseases. These are the things I've been reading here are the concerns. Republicans have a tremendous opportunity. I mentioned that recent polling conducted by this company, for conservative group American Commitment reveals concerning findings among voters age 55. Okay, so basically what they're saying here is that the vast majority in the neighborhood of 80-85% of ARP members oppose the actions that ARP is taking in their lobbying efforts and their marketing efforts. Once seniors are made aware of these facts, they unequivocally reject the dubious partnership between ARP and UnitedHealthcare. This collaboration only serves to drive up healthcare costs for all, particularly our esteemed senior citizens. Conservative seniors may find it prudent to disengage from ARP and instead join a senior organization like AMAC, the Association of Mature American Citizens. AMAC bills itself as the conservative alternative to ARP, offering comparable services while embracing a more free market perspective. AMAC provides a viable alternative to ARP, eschewing any liberal bias. I'm involved with AMAC, and I recommend them highly. I'm inclined to think that they would be an excellent alternative to ARP for those who feel like the discounts and so forth are worthwhile. AMAC offers the same kind of discounts and membership programs that may be attractive to a lot of people. I know that my father was an ARP member back in the days before it got to have its leftist slant. And in fact, he was a member in good standing for at least 5 years after he was pushing up daisies because he was getting mail that indicated that his membership was still in good standing. No problem. Ooh, one of our favorite subjects here is beating up on Medicare Advantage plans. And I know Randy gets all excited every time the opportunity arises. This particular article was uncovered and brought to the surface of our pile of content. And its headline is enticing. It says, "This hospital CEO is done playing nice with Medicare Advantage." Bristol Health CEO Kurt Barwis says that Medicare Advantage is killing the healthcare industry. But when 64% of his system's Medicare beneficiaries have Medicare Advantage, he has no choice but to keep contracting with such plans. "It's not an option for me. The reason is it's not an option is that I have an older community and they need hair. They need hair and they need care." I'm glad Randy's mic isn't on right now. He's guffawing.
Well, they probably, some of them need hair too, Doug.
Yeah, they need hair and they need. You know, you and I don't need any hair, but some of the people in his community may need hair, and they certainly need hair.
Okay. Well, you know, we're going to, you know, should we tell the people we've got, you know, a partnership brewing with the Hair Club for Men?
No, we shouldn't tell them that. Let's just reap all the monetary benefits and keep it a big secret, shall we?
Okie doke.
Okay, in March, Bristol, Connecticut Health Limited, Bristol Health in Connecticut, eliminated 60 positions, 21 of which were occupied. I don't know why that's... Okay, so they had some empty positions that they eliminated also, I guess. I don't know. Randy thinks it's pretty hilarious when these articles confuse me. And frankly, I think it's getting easier. The older I get, the more easily confused I am. But anyway, Bristol Hospital had a bunch of layoffs. A lack of payment from Medicare Advantage insurance plans was a major factor in the decision to cut the staff. The system is short millions in revenue as a result of delayed and denied payments from Medicare Advantage plans. In the past year, Bristol Health has received 13.8% less in payments from Medicare Advantage plans than from fee-for-service Medicare. And I'll tell you right now, they're going to be looking at even greater shortfalls because the federal government is tightening up a lot of the commission and bonus payments that Medicare Advantage plans get from the feds or from the U.S. Treasury. And so I see the trend continuing, and that's going to be painful to these Medicare providers of services. When you look at the math, I'm 72%, meaning his hospital is 72% government pay, and I'm not going to be able to make that up on my commercial book of business. So I have no choice. It's a race to the bottom. How can I get rid of as much cost as possible without impacting the safety and the quality of care? The CEO has been in his office for 17 years, is far from the only hospital executive frustrated with prior authorization and delayed payments from Medicare Advantage plans. A handful of systems have chosen to drop contracts with some or all Medicare Advantage plans. Rather than drop contracts, Mr. Barwis says he's advocating for reform. In March, he testified in support of prior authorization reform at the Connecticut legislature. I am taking an approach because of the significance of Medicare Advantage in my community to go after advocacy and change and to educate. I feel really good about what CMS, what the government, in effect, came out with in 2024, but it didn't go far enough. In addition to lobbying policy, in addition to lobbying policymakers for a change, Mr. Barwis says he's holding Medicare Advantage plans accountable. His advice for other systems handling Medicare Advantage reimbursement issues is be collaborative across teams and stick to the contract. Be collaborative across teams. I don't know really what that means. He also tells his staff not to go back and forth with insurers on the phone once they've received a final denial. The contracting team should go after a dispute resolution process. Staff often wants to be collaborative and nice, but they have to stay focused on the mission. Our mission is our primary focus in sustainability. This organization, in every which way we can, has to be sustainable in order to provide access to our community. Know that the insurance person you're talking to on the phone is 100% focused on shareholder value, not on our patients, not on all the great things we do to take care of people. That is my consistent message to my team. Okay, well, I don't know what he can do about it. If he expects to continue to be reimbursed for the medical bills that his patients encounter, then either he tells them all to go get Medicare supplement plans, which will avoid the headaches entirely, and that's what I recommend to all of my clients. Medicare supplement is the insurance plan that is least likely to cause you disappointment and problems in the future. These people take a risk that their insurance plans will not be accepted for, you know, to cover their medical expenses in the future by their chosen hospitals or doctors. So that's a growing phenomenon that we're seeing that's causing more distress, I think, and we're going to see more before we see less, I believe. But that's just my 2 cents worth. Randy, you got a couple of cents? We could put them together and maybe extend the length of the podcast a little bit.
Well, I do have a couple. Now, we are definitely out of our 75 cents, but I'll donate a couple cents in here. But I think I'm going to form it in the context of stump the insurance expert.
Ooh, ouch. Ouch.
Okay, so I've come up with two or three what I think to be really, really memorable acronyms for things related to Medicare Advantage.
I'm sure the Medicare Advantage zombies are cringing at the thought of
Yes.
having to hear your creations again.
So what does DBA stand for?
Death before dishonor. No, death by, help me out. Death
Died before approval.
died before approval. Excellent, excellent.
Okay, what's DAD, DAD stand for?
Dead on arrival. No, I tried that one already. Tell me what it is.
Died after denial.
Yes. Yep. Very accurate.
And last but certainly not least, what does triple D stand for?
That's a new one. I don't believe I've heard that one.
Delay, deny, dead.
Oh, I should have known better. I should have known better. I have heard that one. And it's unfortunately becoming more and more frequent that those are the outcomes of Medicare Advantage AI bots. It used to be that their bean counters controlled the type of treatment and the amount of treatment that the members of Medicare Advantage plans got. But lately, we've discovered that some of the AI bots, especially those with less than perfect records, have been introduced into the decision-making process for patients' medical treatment. That
Right.
seems
Yeah.
outrageous.
Yeah, it's not a good thing. I again, as a technician, I'm not saying there is no place for it in the process, but it always, always, always has to be controlled and overseen by a human.
I agree. Otherwise, we're turning the technology loose to run a life or death situation with, medical treatment of serious medical diseases. I don't think we're anywhere near ready to give up our control yet. We put
No.
all these doctors through medical school and expect them to be the intelligence behind the treatment that these patients are going to need, and then to ask them to turn it over to AI bots, I don't think that's a wise decision.
No, in no way, shape, or form. Well, you know something? We need to get out of here, land the plane, because we have spent our 75 cents. But before we do, grab your pencil. Doug always loves to hear from you, and you can reach out to him at dbj at mlmmailbag.com. Don't forget, Doug is licensed nationwide to help you with your Medicare supplement planning and purchasing. Check us out at medicareforthelazyman.com. There's a lot of good things going on there. We would appreciate it a review if you can find a place to drop one on the content that Doug produces in its various forms. Last but certainly not least, thank you. We could have been anywhere with you, could have been nowhere with you, but you were with us. You spent a good amount of time listening to Doug Jones and some very good information on the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And if you didn't check your watch, you spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy, originally from Oklahoma. No more. He lives up behind Cave Creek in the high ground, and I'm going to be nice. His fortress of solitude, I checked before we got on, and it's coming in at about 8,600 feet today.
That's not bad. I'll take that every day. Thank you so much, Randy, and thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. We will look forward to seeing your smiling faces on our next episode. Bye-bye.